This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Welcome back. We are at the top of the hour, Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. You are listening to The Pulse. It's 1077. You can also stream us live on the World Wide Web at WTPLFM.com. It is powered by the Granite State Dairy Promotion. And we are in studio right now with Randy Clemens. He is author of a Sriracha cookbook, and he's also a big foodie, and we're always learning all different things from Randy. Love having Randy on.
Love being here. Thanks for having me again.
Thank you.
So what got you on this risotto kick that I understand we're going to talk about today?
I can't stop thinking or talking about risotto.
so random.
You've had risotto, right?
Of course.
And it's when I got your email, I was so excited.
Well, good. it's one of those things, it's kind of a special occasion dish in a way, and I think it's sort of been cursed to have that stigma, and so it doesn't get made all that often, but it's this belief that there's a lot of work to it, and there's some work to it. But this idea that you have to stir it the whole time for like 45 minutes and that you're just essentially a slave, to your stove for 3/4 of an hour. It doesn't have to be that way. But I got to have 2 different risottos last week, which is a good week if you ask me. I celebrated a birthday and went to,
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
It's Labor Day, right?
That's right. All right. Went to Mint Bistro, which was open. Thankfully. And, I was a bit surprised actually at how many places were, closed on Labor Day. I don't know.
They do in the downtown. It's almost like a ghost town.
It was a little, yeah. It was a little parse or sparse with people on the street. So, but Mint was popping. They got the business. So sorry,
there
Republic. Sorry, or whoever else. I forget who I looked at. But
explain what it is, because some people may not know what risotto is.
So, risotto is an Italian rice dish, and it's very creamy. It's usually made with a lot of milk and butter and Parmigiano Reggiano cheese. And it's a very hearty dish, and it's a base, in the same way that any kind of starch is. But it's filling and rich and delightful. And it can be made, lighter if you're looking to lighten it up a bit. But it works really well with, all kinds of meats. I'm partial to veggies now. But it's something that is a bit of a labor of love. You want to really flavor your rice. And so there's some building blocks that go into making a proper risotto. And essentially, it's 5 steps. So in Italian, you've got sofrito, which is the first step. And pardon me if I'm butchering any pronunciations here, but sofrito...
We wouldn't know.
Yeah, well, if someone's out there listening, you know, punching themselves, I'm sorry. The sofrito is basically the beginning, the seasonings, and you are sautéing onions and garlic in a little bit of butter or olive oil or lard or whatever your local fat would be in Italy. And you want to let that go for like 5 to 7 minutes until you really start getting some sweating going on. Your onions are giving off quite a bit of water, and they're starting to turn color a bit, become more translucent. And this is flavoring your oil or your fat, your butter, whatever you're using. And that's very important. And after that, after the sofrito, there is the riso, which is actually adding the rice. And so now you add the rice to that flavored oil, and you're going to stir that around, but you let this cook for a few minutes as well. So you're kind of toasting the rice a bit, and you're coating it. They call it pearling the rice. You're coating it in a layer of this hot oil, and it's going to keep the rice grains from sticking together. And that's the big thing with this. This isn't like a clumpy, you know, rice dish that you might find in like sticky rice or anything like that. Very creamy, and all your grains are separate. So by actually pearling this rice, you're coating it in oil and kind of keeping that. You're forming a little bit of a crust, even though it won't feel like one, but it just keeps the grains from sticking together. After that, very important step, vino. You add a little bit of white wine or red wine, depending on what kind of flavor profile you're going for. You could also use beer or cider. And if you're abstaining from alcohol for whatever reason, you don't have to have this step, of course, but it does add quite a bit of aroma and flavor. And many flavor compounds are actually alcohol soluble. So you're essentially accessing more of the flavor that's hidden in there than you would have. Many are water soluble, many are fat soluble, many are alcohol soluble. So with this dish, you're using kind of all three, and you're really maximizing a lot of flavor. And then from there, if you've got any other flavorings that we're going to go in, so if you're making like a mushroom risotto, which is very common, and we're coming into fall, so we're going to be looking at a lot of butternut squash, and I love Brussels sprouts in mine. We've got some grilled asparagus. That was what I had at Min Bistro. It had grilled asparagus and artichoke hearts and a bunch of other stuff. Yum. It was great. So, and then at this point, this is when it gets to the brodo stage, the broth. So after you add the wine, you kind of stir it around for about a minute until basically all the alcohol evaporates out, almost. And you'll smell it, though. It really does perfume the dish, and you'll taste it when it's finished. And then you go to adding the broth. And so what you do is just get a big ladle, and you take just enough broth to kind of cover. And you put it at a low heat, and you cover it. And you let that cook for... And well, if you're doing the stir the whole time, you stir for 45 minutes, and as the broth kind of evaporates out, you add more, you know, a quarter to a half cup at a time, but you always kind of want to keep the rice topped up with broth. I don't subscribe to this stir for 45 minutes method. I cover mine, throw it in the oven. Once it's up to a simmer, I cover it, throw it in the 350-degree oven for an hour, and I stir it once every 15 minutes, and I call it a day. I find that much easier and allows me to do other things, including chopping up things that are going to go in at the end. So at the very end is the stage called condimenti, the condiments, which invariably is butter and Parmigiano Reggiano and anything else you might be adding in that doesn't need to be really cooked or is already cooked. So if you were adding these beautiful vegetables like the grilled asparagus, you probably don't want that cooking in your rice for 45 minutes. So you would add it in the last few minutes of cooking. So this can be a tricky dish with timing. If you wanted to plan it out ahead, you could par cook it and cook it about halfway or three quarters of the way and then just, you know, reheat or heat for the last 5 or 10 minutes or something like that. But it is a little bit of a labor of love. There's quite a bit involved in it. But again, with the brodo stage, the broth, you want a good base. Water will work, but use a stock or a broth, one you've made, even better. And certainly if you're using mushrooms, risotto al funghi, the mushroom risotto is so common. And if you can get some great dried mushrooms, like porcini mushrooms or something that's really earthy and really packed with flavor, you'll have really, really great rice. I mean, that cooks into your rice. That is all your flavoring there. So don't be afraid to go with a pretty robust broth here.
Now, so creamy with the risotto just really comes from the rice then.
Right. Yeah. So thank you. Excellent point. There is a special grain of rice that is typically used called arborio rice. Right. Yeah. And so that is kind of known as the risotto rice. And it's got a specific starch structure so that it's a slow release. So as you're cooking it, the starches release slowly and sort of form, yeah, that binding sauce. So it's not so much that we're adding cream and butter and cheese. We are. But it gets a lot more of that creaminess from that slow release of the starch over this slower cooking process as opposed to doing like steamed rice and, you know, boiling it for 20 minutes.
I didn't hear you say add cream, though.
It's something you can add at the end if you'd like.
You don't
I'm sorry.
Have to.
You don't have to, no. And really one of my favorite things, I make a really great vegan risotto. I use olive oil instead. And for the sort of cheese flavor, if you wanted it, there's this product called nutritional yeast that you can buy. And they're just flakes. It's B vitamins. It's basically yeast that's been... That's fermented something. I don't know what the base is that they
Vegemite
use.
Vegemite or something.
Yeah, kind of. But these are flakes. That, kind of looks like fish food, actually. And doesn't smell much better. No, I'm really selling it now. But yeah. When you add it to a dish, it really does add kind of a cheesy background note. So anytime I'm making a cashew cheese or something like that, there's a lot in there. And it's not a flavor you'll ever pick out, but it does add that sort of background, like, oh, this I don't taste like I'm missing anything. And it being a B vitamin, it's certainly good for vegetarians like myself to have anyway, since you know, there's not a whole lot of rich sources of certain B vitamins outside of meat. Fermented foods do have them, so that's kind of where it's coming from. Cheeses, beer, wines, you can get some B vitamins that way. But
I am not so intimidated now about making risotto. And so in lieu of butter, you really could just use olive oil.
Absolutely, or coconut oil, or any, you know, whatever you like to use. Absolutely go with that.
And you know, and I always think of risotto as being so unhealthy, but you can cook it healthy.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm trying to think what the rice really does add a big element of creaminess. So I don't feel as though I miss it when I'm not adding it at the very end. You know, if I'm not adding a bunch more butter or anything like that. And if that's your thing, go for it. I like it too. And I'll do that from time to time. But if I'm not looking for something that heavy, certainly you can cut that out. You can, you know, I think if you maybe even tried something a little different, like, I don't know if yogurt, I think yogurt maybe would curdle. I'm not sure, but, you know, maybe I think you might be able to mix
at
in some,
end.
Yeah.
I bet at the end.
You know, so something like that might be, if you're trying to go a little lighter and it's because of the fermentation, I don't think you're going to missing any flavor. The yogurt's certainly going to bring its own bit to it. So something like that might be really good, actually.
And I like that you, it sounds like you don't do any measuring with it either. I mean, basically when you're adding your liquid, you're saying just barely, you know, letting the rice stay at the top and continue.
Yeah, it ends up being about 3-1 liquid to rice, about. But be prepared. What I do is if I'm making a cup of rice, I'll have 4 cups of broth ready to go. And I did not mention it should be hot. So you should have your broth at a poach or simmer temperature, not boiling, but keep that hot, because when you add it to the rice, if you're adding cold or room temp, like, it's going to add a bunch of cooking time. So I just have a pot going, you know, on very, very low or covered just to keep it hot. But that's the way to do it.
Add it in hot. And
I'm gonna try it. Yeah, just keep it kind of topped up. And after that, if you're doing it on the stovetop after 45 minutes, and if you're doing it in the oven after about an hour, give it a taste. See where it's at. There is no direct measurement. It has all kinds of things to do with factors out of our control, how absorbent the rice is and how humid it is out today and all kinds of other little variants. But also, yeah, that cooking time, you know, if your oven's a little off or just, who knows, your broth was 10 degrees colder than when you added it last time. So you want to check in with your food and taste it before you serve it to people. But see where it's at. See, hey, maybe this doesn't need an hour. Maybe it's, you know, it's already getting al dente or, you know, you can pull it out then and season it too. Taste it. Does it need salt and pepper? A little more cheese. Maybe some acidity if you want to brighten it up with some lemon zest. Lemon zest is like my next best friend after garlic and salt for fixing dishes. I mean, those are really the 4 big things I taste for when I'm cooking something: is salt, lemon juice, or lemon zest. Just some kind of acidity to really brighten things up. And oh, I said there were a couple, didn't I? Garlic, salt, and lemon. Those are like the 3 things when I really boil it down for someone. That's what I learned in culinary school, is how to use those 3 things and my knife. Simple as that. So just, if I could give one piece of advice today, it's to taste your food before you serve it.
What's the, describe to somebody, if you could, in words, the consistency a good risotto should be when it's all done.
I think, so there was a restaurant in Los Angeles that I used to like going to called Risotto, and they got everything right except the risotto, which was heartbreaking.
But false advertising.
Yeah, well, it was chalky. It was a little underdone, and maybe that's to their taste. I don't know. But it wasn't like terribly underdone at all. Otherwise, I would have asked for them to cook it longer. But it was just a little not quite there for me. And again, it's a tough dish to time out in a restaurant. I didn't envy them, but if you're going to name your restaurant that, if you use other kinds of rice, you can kind of get it. The starches are different, and it's more library paste, kind of like gummy, and you don't want that at all. Creamy is the word you're looking for.
Like a really loose, or not really loose, loose oatmeal.
Yeah, I think around there. But yeah, I mean, the rice is going to give you some chew more so than a thin oat would, and less than pasta would, you know. And so it's kind of a nice in the middle there, I guess, texture-wise, in between kind of oatmeal and pasta.
Yeah.
But you know, I want to say you want to err on the side of overdone versus underdone. But, don't be afraid to taste bites of it. Like when you're like, oh, yeah, that's it right there, you'll kind of know.
Yeah. So I'm thinking of one episode of Hell's Kitchen. You know, with Gordon Ramsay yelling at the chef, "You burnt the risotto!" I could just hear him saying that.
Yeah, well, and that's just keeping an eye on your liquids. You know, as long as you're keeping it topped up with the broth, you should be pretty good. But yeah, I think 3-1 is about what I go for.
You have to try. I am so anxious for you to go to Function.
Okay.
Over on Elm Street, 931 Elm Street, right next door to Dancing Lion, believe, or right near there.
Yes.
And you got to check out Chef Tracy is her name. Tracy Fitz is her name, the executive chef. and her pesto risotto with peas, sun-dried tomatoes, shaved Parmesan on top. The best I've ever had, really.
Oh, cool. I love
so
peas.
So good. It's little baby peas. It's so good. I'm anxious for you to try that.
Okay.
You
deal.
Will love it.
Deal.
Love
I'll
it.
Go.
And the tofu, we joked. We
buffalo
made fun.
Buffalo tofu.
The buffalo tofu was fantastic. What
buffalo
else?
Buffalo tofu. Sorry to everyone. I just sang on the radio. Yuck.
Well,
sorry.
There you go. First for everything. Well, you mentioned the Dancing Lion in our, we just have a couple minutes left. You actually were in there, and you're telling me that a Korean broadcast team came over. Why were they here, and what was your part in all this?
So, the Korean Broadcasting System is putting together a little documentary about Sriracha, and it's certainly something I've spent a lot of my time involved in with my two cookbooks. And so they had just finished interviewing the CEO of Hoi Fong Foods, the company that makes Sriracha. They were out in Los Angeles, and they were hoping to connect with me there. And I let them know that I had moved to Manchester, New Hampshire.
Oops.
And well, hey, they are actually DC based, so they flew out. And, chatted with me about Sriracha, and we went over to Dancing Lion Chocolates, and they'd made, two chocolate Sriracha ice creams for the occasion, which were pretty, pretty incredible. And, so I'm looking forward to seeing what they put together. It's going to be airing sometime in mid-October, but I'll be sure to keep you guys posted.
Definitely.
Yeah. I don't know that we could see that here, though, could we? We'd have to.
I'm sure through the magic of the internet, it's going to be up online.
Sure.
Whether or not we'll need subtitles on top of their subtitles, or if it's, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be dubbed over, if you'll still be able to hear me.
Will
but,
you be singing is the question.
I don't think they caught me, but I was wearing that laugh mic most of the day, so who knows, maybe they caught me.
Oh, that's very cool. So you are, I mean, we talk about you being an expert on this. The fact that, you know, that an international television crew would look to an expert and find you. It's kind of cool.
In little old Manchester, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
I was very honored and flattered, and we had a good time that day and had some really good ice cream, you know. When my calendar says start the day at a chocolate shop, it can't be too bad.
Well, you're a vegan now. What about the ice cream, though?
Well, I just keep vegetarian.
Okay.
Yeah, when I know where my dairy and eggs come from, you know, I'm much less concerned in all those regards. So, but they definitely cater to some different needs there. They always label. They've got some brownies that come in from this woman, Donna, that are fantastic. And once in a while, they're gluten-free. They make them with like a hazelnut flour, which is out of this world. So they're on top of it. They know if you've got some special dietary restrictions that, they can let you know what you can have and what you can't have and all that. So
now, do they have that chocolate sriracha ice cream on their menu?
They, for better and for worse, they only do ice cream flavors once. And when they make about 4 quarts of it, and when it's done, it's done. And that's kind of how they treat some of their chocolates, too. They have their year-round production bars, but they also do these bonbons that are better than they should be. And, they only do those flavors once, and so we'll go. I go every Friday. There's a group of people, some friends of mine, and that we meet up every Friday at Dancing Lion at around noon. And just kind of hang out from noon to 3 and have chocolate and go next door to Cafe Loren as well and just kind of, hang out and have chocolate and socialize. And I definitely leave there with a lighter wallet and a bigger waistband than when I walked in, but I no regrets about it. I it's a highlight that I look forward to each week.
The Van Gogh and other impressionistic renderings that go on to some of the chocolates is just, you've never seen anything like it before.
Yeah, well, that's so some of their chocolate bars they paint artistic creations on. I mean, this is actual chocolate that they're painting onto these, and they do. They lay their works of art. And my girlfriend was actually saying that she'd gone with a friend of hers, and they'd spent about 2 hours painting these chocolate bars. And that when you're, that something has to transfer there, that there's 2 hours of creative energy put into this chocolate bar. Mm-hmm. I think when you eat that, you're getting some of that, that actually gets transferred. It's a little metaphysical, but that there's some kind of energy that's been focused on this chocolate. And when you eat it, I think you absorb some of that as well. And, and when you feel that way about your food, I think you can be really delighted sometimes, even if you put that time into it, it's you're getting that reward back.
So as a transplant from the West Coast, you're finding a few little places now that you are feeling that you really enjoy and make a part of your life on a regular basis.
Absolutely. And just getting to travel the state. I mean, I went up to Grafton for the first time over the weekend. It was a friend's birthday, Kevin. He was doing a greenhouse raising, actually, and little group of people came up over the weekend and helped them put together the greenhouse and just brought up some food. Some of the food I was making for the Korean broadcasting system, I made big batches of and took some up to the greenhouse raising. And then Kevin made some risotto with some summer squash from his garden that was just, it was so good.
How did the Korean broadcasters and crew enjoy what you made for them?
Oh, it turned out really good. The sriracha slaw recipe from the first book is one of the things I made, and it's not your traditional coleslaw. It's got an almond butter, orange juice, sriracha kind of base instead of mayo base. And then I made a watermelon sriracha sangria with some white wine and rum and lime slices and lots of pureed watermelon, mint in both, mint and cilantro in the slaw, mint in the drink, but just really cool and refreshing and crisp. And I didn't want to cook. It was hot last week. So I was like, what can I make without turning on my oven?
How long till a local restaurant snaps you up and presses you into service? Have you thought about
it?
I
will never work in a restaurant again, but I will consult all day long. So if anyone would like, yeah, sure, by all means. But I got out of kitchens after about a year, but my brain is a resource that can be tapped anytime.
Well, the way you just went through five steps of making the risotto, including the Italian designations of the various titles.
Oh, yes.
That was impressive.
Thank you. Thank you. Sure. Culinary school paid off then.
Yes, it did.
Thanks, Uncle Dave.
Whatever you paid. All right. Well, that's it for our segment today.
It is. Was really interesting. Yeah. I loved it. I loved it. Randy, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
See you soon.
Yeah, take care.
All right. You are listening to Food for Thought. We're going to go on a short break. And when we come back, we'll be in studio with Steve Freeman. Wake the health up, America. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back. Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. It is Monday, and you are listening to The Pulse, 107.7. You can also stream us live at WTPLFM.com. It is powered by the Granite State Dairy Promotion, and we are in studio now with Steve Freeman, Wake the Health Up America. You are a foodie just like Randy. You and Randy, I think, are similar. You'd get along.
I think we should open a restaurant together, but he clearly doesn't want to work in a restaurant again.
Yeah, but he didn't. He left the door open a little bit off here.
He did a little.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah,
I noticed that, too.
He totally backpedaled a little
bit. He did.
I don't think that's top on his list, but it might have moved up a couple pegs.
I think he was intrigued by the idea of doing a little part-time work for the co-op.
Yeah,
I think he was.
We're all in support of these local creative chefs to do this sort of work.
I don't know if you heard, the Korean Broadcasting System came and interviewed him for his expertise on sriracha, which is, really, he's this nationally known, worldwide known expert, probably a handful of them, and that's very cool. It's like the Dancing Lion. I mean, how many chocolate shops are you going to find that have Renoir paintings on their chocolates?
Mm. No, Rich over there at Dancing Lion, there's probably a handful of them in the world, and three of them are probably in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
We're very lucky to have Dance in Line here in town. It's truly an elevating experience to enjoy their chocolate, drinking chocolate, which is how chocolate was discovered. I'm sure Rich can tell you way more about this. He gave me a quick education. But those of you who like chocolate or need it, three times a week,
Daryl,
drink it. It is the best form of chocolate I've ever experienced in my life. It is unbelievably rich, decadent, delicious,
so
and
what,
guilt-free.
How do they make it? What do they do with it?
You know, I'm not quite sure how he makes it. I would imagine he boils down the cocoa beans and makes it into, it's kind of like a hot cocoa, but it's a real hot cocoa made with chocolate or cocoa beans. And some of them have a little spice to it. And spice and chocolate, as well as salt and chocolate, is the perfect marriage as far as those foods go. Ooh. Definitely try yourself, especially on a crisp day like today. Mm-hmm. It's one of the best flavored, best tasting beverages on the planet. And you can only get it at Dance in Line.
So what is the consistency, though?
Like thick, hot cocoa.
Okay.
Like a...
It's not like a melt. It's not like a melted chocolate or a ganache. It's like a tea
or coffee sort of thing. Just a bit thicker, and it reflects the colors of the rainbow because of the complexity of it. And you hold it with two hands. It doesn't have a handle, so it keeps you warm. Keeps your hands warm like you're drinking soup. It's a phenomenal beverage, and he makes a different variety every time. And I don't work there. I have no financial interest, but it is so delicious. So delicious.
So do you just go in and order like a chocolate drink?
A drinking chocolate. He always has it written as the special menu. It is, if you're in Manchester, stop by and try it. You won't be disappointed. It is just exceptional. And it's not like a pound of chocolate. It's not really sweet. It doesn't hurt your teeth. It's a very complex drink, like a fine cognac or French Bordeaux from 1978 sort of
thing. Is it so a blend between bitter and sweet, would you say? More on the bitter side?
I'd say there's a little bit of bitter to it, but it's just wonderfully perfect.
Nothing added. I'm going to guess he's not putting sugar or anything?
He might put something. I honestly don't know. I would think he uses beans and some form of sugar to sweeten it. Otherwise, it would be an extremely bitter drink. So there's got to be some sort of sweetener. Maybe he uses
cream. Maybe with the flavor, you know?
It's one of those things. He's a purist. He's using the real ingredients. I don't question whether it's GMO free or he sources local with the exception of his chocolate has to come from where cocoa beans are best, which is all over the world, Madagascar, etc. But it's one of the best drinks I've ever experienced in my life.
And when I first check that out,
I first got it, I'm like, is it Swiss Miss with some marshmallows? Because you know,
Swiss Miss.
And it wasn't anything at all. It was a really unexpected treat. And that's what we're trying to deliver as the Manchester Food Co-op is always exceeding in delivering the unexpected. So we, at every opportunity we pursue, we're all about delivering something that is not easy to get or unobtainable or you've not been able to find locally. We're set out to deliver that.
Well, we haven't seen you for a couple of weeks because we had a holiday.
We did.
So what is the latest with the co-op in terms of the vehicle that will be traveling around town? What's the latest on that?
The vehicle's doing great. So Manchester Food Co-op is manchesterfood.coop. We've raised, I think, over $9,000 just on our online promotion, which is all member-owner driven. A few businesses have donated. We created a webpage, a section of our online store where you can donate, and we give you treats and bags and samples of food that we have in hand. Most of our products are made locally. Some of them are donated from across the country. So we're moving forward with that. We're looking for grants. We're going to put the ads out soon to look for a driver and an employee to start operating this truck. And again, the mission is to deliver sort of a farmer's market on wheels, not a food truck where we'll make steak and eggs or omelets to order. We did have a meeting with the health department, which I don't have the information on today, on what process we're going to use or what type of license we're going to be working on. And we're also talking to Cabot Cheese, which is a wonderful cooperative of farmers in Vermont. They've been incredibly supportive of the co-op. They have a food truck that they run up and down the East Coast, and we just started talking to them over the weekend as to how they do it with licensing to show up at these random events and start cooking food and giving out samples. So we're working on putting all that together so we can get this truck off the ground before the first snowstorm. And that's sort of
exciting.
Been our timeline. It's a short timeline as opposed to the store, which is much longer. But we just sort of put this thing together on the side, and it's gaining wheels, and it's gaining a lot of support from other co-ops across the nation and other organizations that are throwing the money at us. They're like, this is a great idea. Let's get this thing out into the
Who's
community.
Doing the artwork, or do you have some kind of a logo? Or I know you got the Peapod and all that thing.
The Peapod is our logo. The
yes.
Artwork is dependent upon our donors. Because if you donate, you can put your name on the truck.
Oh.
So that's part of the donation is you have naming rights of the truck. So that'll be designed sort of when the fundraising closes. Okay, we have 300 donors. Let's put their names on. I still push the message to the board that I want to put pictures. Because a name is a name, but you see a picture, I know that guy. Hey, that's my community. He's a co-op owner. I want to really instill the message of this is who we are. It's us.
That's a great idea.
It's not them. It's not these actors hired to, you know, be eating a cheeseburger and french fries sort of thing. It's like these are the real people that shop here. They're humans like you and I. They're not actors sort of thing. Haven't gotten the answer from the board yet. So either names or faces will be all over the truck design with our messaging and pricing and things of that sort. So that's going to come a little later once we close the donations.
But you got to get it on the road because we're in peak season as far as fresh foods. You kind of run out of things as you get later into the fall or winter, huh?
We do run out of the fresh things, but then we turn to shelf-stable things like honey and syrup lotions and soaps and all those other things that you know, there's almost 1,000 things that are produced in this state that you wouldn't know unless this mobile truck shows up. And that's made in Bedford. That's made in Hopkinton. Wow, I didn't know that. How do I get this stuff? You'll get it all at the Manchester Food Co-op. And we really we've set out from day one. We have an excellent board of directors that have just been so committed to sourcing locally as much as possible. And if we can't get it local, like chocolate, you can't grow cocoa in New Hampshire. Where can you get the best chocolate? Where's chocolate? Where are the ranchers or farmers or harvesters of cocoa pods? Where are they treated the best? Where is it fair trade chocolate? So to really make sure people are making a decent wage, because that's what all co-ops are set out to protect, really, the employees and the owners, to make sure they're treated fairly. So the truck will be different every week, and in the winter we'll have the winter vegetables. We'll probably have a freezer with frozen portions of locally raised livestock. Eggs are available year round. Maybe snow cones in the winter, fresh from the roadside.
I can see you showing up at all the ski resorts in the area, and just even though in winter you think you pack it up and go home. No, there's even more and different opportunities for the truck.
And I love outdoor events in the winter, and maybe somebody like Rich from Dancing Lion would partner with us. We've talked about partnering with other businesses too to have their, you know, a mobile Dancing Lion truck, if you will. We haven't spoken to him, so if he's surprised when he hears this, but we are reaching out to that. Well, how can we bring these local businesses out on the road with us? So I'm sure many people don't know drinking chocolate on Elm Street in Manchester. It's not, I'm going up to Manchester for the weekend to get a cup of drinking chocolate. You know, it's one of those things that a lot of people don't know about it. So let's educate them and inform them with our mobile mission.
Love it.
All right.
I think we'll go on a break.
Let's do it.
We are in studio with Steve Freeman, Wake the Health Up America, where you're listening to The Pulse, Food for Thought. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 1077 The Pulse.
146, Carol and Mike, it's Food for Thought, 107.7 WTPL. We're brought to you by Red Arrow Diners, Manchester, Milford, and Londonderry. Also, New England Coffee, the official coffee of Food for Thought, newenglandcoffee.com. And Casey's Rib Shack, famous hickory-smoked, award-winning Southern Pit Barbecue like none other in the state. 837 2nd Street in Manchester. They're online at ribshack.net.
All right, and we are in studio with Steve Freeman. Always interesting. Wake the Health Up America. We're talking about the Manchester Food Co-op and what's going to be happening with them. And so what is right now, I know I've been eating fantastic corn.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been listening to you. I've been just getting our 3 ears of corn per meal at night, because I used to do that. I used to get like, you know, 6 or 7, save it for a couple of days. But, you know, there's a farmer's market right around the corner from my house. You know, one of those ones with the honor system. You know, put the money in, and they, you know, they stock it a couple times a day. So I've been doing that, Steve.
I got some corn last week. I bought it fresh at a local farm stand up in the Lakes region, and we cooked it that afternoon. And they had some corn that they had brought up on Friday, and it was equally delicious. But what a difference in the starchiness, the pop of the kernels.
When you
try it fresh and you had some in your crisper drawer for a few days, it's like, wow, why would I do this when it is so delicious and so easy to buy it and cook it that day. Right. Like I said, treat it like fresh fish.
Yeah.
Cuz quickly the sugars turn to starch, cuz you've taken life from the plant. So now it's going into defense mode with however plants engineer that stuff.
Rigor mortis. Yes. Their version of rigor mortis.
So they're changing their makeup after you've cut the plant from its water and sunlight source. So that's why fresh corn, it's one of those things. We have a short window of it where it's fresh and local. Enjoy it the day you buy it.
How much longer for corn? We still have
I think like 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah,
it usually goes till a little after, right around Halloween.
Oh, okay. So we do have quite a bit more time. Okay. I'm always thinking, you know, when it starts, that it seems like it's so short, but yeah, because corn is just so
I think
good.
Corn has a second life. They grow it, they cut it, and then another growth comes behind it. I think. I wish I had more experience with farming, but I just don't. I would just rather pay them to do what they do best and be happy to eat it. But I'm pretty sure corn is one of those plants that has a second life.
It's interesting. Like maple syrup is different, you know, at the first wave of it. And again, partly depending on the weather, it's a little lighter and a little bit more delicate. But as you get later into the season, you get a heavier, more robust type of flavor. So a lot of things at play here.
All a factor then of the environmental the environment, period. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How it affects the flavor of everything we eat. So get out there and enjoy the corn while it's
definitely
available. Tomatoes are still popping up, peppers, cukes might be at the end. There's still greens. We're turning into the fall vegetables now, so the heartier squashes, rutabagas, pumpkins, you're going to start seeing pumpkins. Well, I'm sorry, pumpkins have already landed, but they're from out of the area. Our local pumpkins will be coming up in a few weeks. And pumpkins are one of those, you know, that's another fantastic food that really doesn't get, other than, I'd use a cuss word, but this pumpkin spice.
Right?
Everything.
I don't like that.
Motor oil, pumpkin spice tires, enough. Just eat real pumpkins and spice it yourself at home. Pumpkin spice mocha choco latte. I don't like any of it. It reminds me of
neither.
Comstock pie filling that my mom used to make every Thanksgiving. It has that taste. So just wait, and sugar pumpkins come out in a few weeks. They're the smaller, you know, like a little smaller than a basketball. Absolutely delicious. Peel them, cut them up, cook them like squash, shred them, cook it like spaghetti, and it's a delicious flavor. It's a limited time to have a fresh and local sugar pumpkin, but you'll see those at the store, at the farmer's stands, and use them other than decorating your front steps with a jack-o'-lantern. Pumpkins are completely edible. Pumpkin seeds have really taken off. Pumpkin seeds you can find at a lot of health food stores. And I have actually a really sweet treat that I can't wait to be selling in bulk at the co-op. Pumpkin seed oil. It's from this small factory in Austria. I have these four oils I got at a food show a few years ago, and I've asked everyone, and everyone looks at me like, what are you talking about? Pumpkin seed oil, chili seed oil, tomato seed oil, and one other I'm forgetting.
Grape, maybe?
Nope. But anyways, it's an intense flavor from the seed of pumpkins that I use on soups, rices, salads. I use just a couple of drops, and I can't wait to get this in the co-op and also incorporate it into recipes for the local baked goods and local salad bars and things of that of the co-op. But it's something I've never heard of. I've asked chefs. They're like, I've never heard of it. I'm like, I can't wait to have this at the co-op.
And expensive, though, maybe, huh?
It is expensive, but you use a very small amount to get an intense flavor. A little bottle, ounce and a half, is probably like $12, but it'll last you 3 years. I've had four bottles for 2 years.
That's because you know you're gonna you don't want to see it go. You know, you're milking.
Well,
right?
Yeah. Well, it's not that I don't want to see it go. I want to learn how to use this stuff more because it's a truly unique flavor. And chili seed oil, like sriracha, it has a really awesome flavor, and you just use a couple of drops, and it's sensational. And again, that goes back to, well, no, it's not local, but it's one of the best things you can find, and that's what the co-op's all about. If it's not local, what is the next best step? I think I might have talked about prosciutto. America doesn't make prosciutto, even though some local farmers do produce their own prosciutto, and it is great stuff, but prosciutto is an air and salty air quality of a region of Italy that you can't duplicate anywhere else on the planet, so it'll never be like it is from there. We do a pretty good job at some of the local places in America, but in my opinion, it still doesn't compare to that region of Italy. So, and before we lose time, I just want to remind everyone, it is National Child Obesity Month Awareness. It's an initiative that First Lady Michelle Obama started a few years ago. And really, the biggest thing I can sort of offer our listeners is to just pay attention to where the sugar is in the foods you're buying that are prepackaged. Don't worry so much about fruits and naturally occurring sugars. Look at there's 36 or 38 forms, names of sugar that are allowed by our friends at USDA that are in just about anything you buy in a package has a form of package, can, bottle, et cetera. It has some form of sugar, including sugar alcohols and all these new sugars. It's one of the leading factors of childhood obesity is the amount of sugar consumption. 100 years ago, we used to eat about 4 pounds a year. 50 years ago, it was like 12 pounds a year. Now it's like 36 pounds a year.
Nine times the amount from 100 years ago.
If that's quick math, yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
that was pretty quick, huh?
It is. That's good. 9 times 4, 30. Yeah. Great job.
Ding, 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 ding.
So just really be aware of sugar, because sugar is leading to lots of cancers, lots of obesity, lots of blood problems, lots of health problems in general. Wake the health up, America. Just pay attention to what you're eating and try to get rid of the processed forms of sugar.
Yeah, and there's more of it than you think there is.
Way,
read the labels.
Way more. If you've seen those videos or commercials on how many scoops of sugar are in like a supersized smoothie thing,
that's
if you
disgusting.
Saw that much sugar, you'd be like, wow.
You would never just put it in your mouth like that.
No, never. Never. So just want people to be aware it's childhood obesity. We're about 35% of the of children today are obese, where 20 years ago it was like 18%.
It's true, too, when you see the kids. I mean, I see that a lot because, you know, I struggle with my weight, so I'm always conscious of that. And it's true. I mean, you see the kids, and they're big. Even like some of the teenagers, high school kids, you know, they are.
It's... And a heavy sugar load as a child changes your growth pattern, changes what your pituitary gland does for your body, and it's not so good for you. And chemical sugar is just, it wreaks havoc on your body. And sugar is, they've proven it in laboratories. Sugar is more addictive than cocaine. Rats go crazy on sugar, where cocaine they get a little crazy, but sugar they get totally off the wall. And it's a legal drug, in my opinion, and I stay away from it. I almost eat nothing out of a package, and if I do, people are like, are you going to read the label, Steve? I'm like, well, yeah, I might still eat it, but I still want to know how many forms of chemicals I'm ingesting here.
I'm taking you over to Dancing Lion after the show, by the
Let's
way.
Let's do it. Perfect
Drink
day
some
for it.
Chocolate.
Yeah.
I can't wait to take Daryl, because he loves chocolate.
Daryl said it's okay if you take Mike and I.
Oh.
He just texted
he
me.
Did. So.
He did, yeah. He's busy and... refinishing this
He's
afternoon.
Finishing a granite top.
And we're finishing the show. How did
and
that work
we
out?
We are finishing the show. Mm-hmm. It is Monday. Monday's segment is over. Steve, thank you very much. Wake the Health Up America. We always learn something and just get more educated. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Up next is Kale and Company. And what do we have on tap tomorrow? Oh, tomorrow, Mike, you are out.
I'm out tomorrow, yeah.
Procedure going on.
In-town Manchester's coming in, though, right?
In-town Manchester's coming in to talk about Taste of Downtown Wednesday night. And my co-host tomorrow is going to be Miss America's Outstanding Teen.
Wow, you get the celebrities.
Allie Nault. So I'm very excited about that. And my son, Tyler, as well. So stay tuned tomorrow. And Kale and Company up next. We'll see everybody tomorrow. Bye.